Welcome to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. I'm Karen Jagoda. My guest today is Dr. Julie Schultz. She is the VP of Product at Avalon Healthcare Solutions, AvalonHCS.com. And the topic today is GLP-1 drugs. So, Julie, I want to welcome you to the show. I appreciate you taking a few minutes to be with us.
Thank you, Karen. I'm happy to be here.
Tell us about the kinds of services Avalon Healthcare provides.
So Avalon is a lab insights company that helps health systems, health plans manage their laboratory spend and their laboratory benefits. We do that by contracting directly with labs, but also on the back end, working on claim editing to ensure that the labs are meeting the criteria that the plan has set. Through that, we have deep expertise in laboratory medicine and have a very deep set of data as well that can be used to formulate lab insights for health plans, employers, or others to better understand how to manage their lab spend and the clinical quality of the laboratory testing.
And you're really in the biomarker business. Would that be fair to say?
So absolutely. Labs increasingly are looking at biomarkers that provide an overall sense of patient health. Molecular diagnostics, including genetic testing, is on the upswing. And understanding the complexities of that testing and the clinical decisions that come from it is more and more important for health plans, employers, and the broader healthcare ecosystem.
And we wanted to talk today about GLP-1 drugs. So what can you tell us about the impact those drugs might have long-term for people with diabetes, obesity, cardiometabolic disorders, and other diseases it might affect?
Absolutely. So GLP-1 drugs were initially indicated for diabetes and helping patients who struggle to control their diabetes with other medications to help bring down their hemoglobin A1C. But what we found is that they really have a much broader effect on the entire kidney metabolic syndrome, if you will. Increasingly, clinicians and the American Heart Association are recognizing that cardio-kidney metabolic syndrome is really a collection of related disorders that involve cardiovascular disease, diabetes, obesity, liver disease, and others as well. And so what's interesting about GLP-1s is they've been shown to have an impact on many of these systems. More recently, they have been indicated for weight loss and have also been indicated for the prevention of major adverse cardiac events, including heart attack and stroke in patients that have ASCVD. And there's ongoing research that these drugs are actually going to be incredibly beneficial for some of these other cardio-kidney metabolic diseases like kidney disease, heart failure, and so on.
When I hear a physician like yourself describe this, I wonder if we're thinking of this as a miracle drug, and maybe we need to be taking a step back and educating patients about the appropriate use of GLP-1. So what can you say about the need to really inform people before they jump into the program?
Absolutely. So I think, like you said, these drugs are very exciting and hold a lot of promise, especially in terms of impacting long-term cardiometabolic outcomes. But they really need to be used in combination with diet, exercise, and lifestyle interventions. The drugs come with some side effects that are including nausea, gastrointestinal side effects that can be certainly distressing and really need to be managed in collaboration with those other supplementary services like lifestyle coaching, diet and exercise, et cetera, and really need to be monitored closely to manage those side effects and manage the results that come with the drugs.
And what can you say about the need to have accurate lab tests to figure out which patients are going to be the best candidates for this kind of therapy?
Yeah, lab tests are really one of the key tools we have in assessing whether the patient's cardiometabolic health status. Some of the lab tests that help to measure cardiometabolic health include the hemoglobin A1C that we've mentioned, but also lipid panels, as well as EGFR, estimated glomerular filtration rate, which is a measure of kidney function. And then there's newer tests that can look at, you know, some of the genetic causes of cardiovascular disease, such as lipoprotein A or LP little a, that can also be really helpful in understanding a patient's cardiometabolic disease health. Now, all of those labs can come together and can actually be used to calculate a score of a patient's 10-year and 30-year risk of major adverse cardiac events, so heart attack and stroke, but also heart failure. And so bringing all those things together is really going to inform, like I said, the patient's broader cardiometabolic health status. And can also help to start identifying patients who are going to be most benefit from these drugs. So for example, we've worked on some data for a small regional health plan in the Southeast United States. And we've seen that among patients who are being prescribed GLP-1s for diabetes, are about 20 to 30% of them actually don't have an associated lab value of a hemoglobin A1C indicating uncontrolled diabetes. And so there's a few things that we think that are going on here. First, it's very likely that a lot of patients are trying to get the drugs for weight loss rather than diabetes. Only about 40 to 60% of health plans are currently covering the drugs for weight loss. And so for many patients, the only option to get the drugs would be to have them to have sort of a diagnosis of diabetes. And so we think physicians are ordering the drugs for patients, like I said, who don't have diabetes, but rather could benefit from the drugs for weight loss. So that's one example. I would also point out that when we look at some of the lab values, we start to see a lot of significant health disparities in terms of who is getting the prescriptions for GLP-1s. So for example, when we take all of those lab values and calculate patients' 10-year risk of heart attack and stroke using the PREVENT equations, we actually see that patients who are healthier cardiometabolically are more likely to get the drugs. And this is before they're being put on the drugs. And so this is really indicating to us that likely wealthier, healthier patients, likely with physicians who are more willing to go through the work and jump through the hoops of prior authorizations, that those patients are getting the drugs.
I might also suggest that maybe that stigma of people being overweight, it's their fault. They don't have enough self-control versus that they can use this drug to help them lose weight and to maintain a lower weight. It might be part of the problem with physicians not thinking about GLP-1s for those people. Would that be fair to say?
I think that's absolutely happening for a few different reasons. I think physicians are still kind of trained to be, you know, specialists in a single disease or organ system. So you think about endocrinologists, you know, will treat patients for diabetes. Nephrologists will treat patients for chronic kidney disease. Increasingly, we're starting to actually see cardiometabolic centers of excellence that really form teams of these specialists so that they can better really treat the whole patient. And to your point, rather than, when a patient comes in, who's perhaps overweight, has high blood pressure, they might think, about GLP-1s as a treatment option, not just to kind of help the patient lose weight, but really to significantly improve that patient's long-term health that will likely result from improved hemoglobin A1C, weight loss, and reduction in risk of cardiovascular events.
Because obesity does lead to other conditions. So again, it's trying to figure out what the source of the problem is. One of the things that is really interesting about your platform that it allows for real-time data sharing between the labs and the health plans. Why is that such a revolutionary idea, and how does that really help patients and the providers come to a quicker decision?
Yeah, great question. So historically, lab data has been really difficult to come by. Oftentimes, the best source of it is in electronic health record, for example. But typically, that's added manually. The lab results might be sort of scanned in a PDF. And so it's really difficult to get access to those lab values. Because Avalon works directly with labs, we have that real original source of data. The example I gave before about how 20 to 30% of patients who are who are getting GLP-1s for diabetes don't actually have an A1C value indicative of uncontrolled diabetes, that data could be used by the health plans either to, you know, determine who needs the drugs, but also perhaps to deny the drugs if the patients aren't actually meeting the right clinical criteria. So that's kind of one example. I think more broadly, though, the lab data can be used to better understand the broader population cardiometabolic health risk and can be used in either risk stratification, patient identification, and point of care decision support so that physicians who, you know, have that patient in front of them have recommendations and risk levels tailored to that patient that help to inform the decision of whether of which treatment the patient will use.
Are those risk models being refined all the time and taking into account GLP-1 use by some of those patients so that it becomes better informed, the model becomes a better predictive model?
That's a great question. Certainly, and I was at the American Heart Association conference a few weeks ago. There's lots and lots of research being done on both GLP-1s as well as the prevent equations. They were, the prevent equations were actually updated, a little over a year ago, to include, broader, population characteristics, to better represent certain races and ethnicities, and also to, you know, take into consideration what we've learned, since the previous, pooled cohort equations were created. And, so the good news is that the experts are, constantly, you know, researching and updating the equations. But unfortunately, at this juncture, I think it's really kind of a new frontier in understanding how GLP-1s will affect that 10 or 30 year cardiometabolic disease risk. And certainly, I think once we have the research and the data, you know, hopefully physicians and researchers will do their best to translate that into practice. But sometimes that can take a long time. And that's really why having decision support tools, risk stratification tools for health plans and providers can help physicians more rapidly take those learnings and translate that into the care that they're giving their patients.
Is that also a way to balance the cost versus the people who really need it and help the health plans figure out what they should cover?
Exactly. Right now, we know that health plans just simply can't afford to cover these drugs. And similarly, employers who are, you know, at the end of the day, footing the bill, can't afford the rising pharmaceutical costs. For example, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Michigan recently was almost, I think, about $2 billion over budget for their pharmacy budget. And about 400 million of that was due to GLP-1s alone. The remainder of that was due to specialty medications. And so this is a really significant budget problem for health plans and employers. And they really need to be thinking about how to best spend that dollar on GLP-1 medications. I would argue that you could use lab values and other kind of clinical indicators to best understand which patients in your population are going to be most likely to benefit from the drugs. But unfortunately, I don't think that's being done today. As I mentioned earlier, we saw that significant disparities in cardiometabolic health and who's getting the drugs. So, for example, patients with diabetes, the highest risk population that has a more than a 10% 10-year risk of heart attack or stroke, those patients are actually three times less likely to get GLP-1 drugs than patients who have the lowest cardiovascular disease risk with a less than 5% chance over 10 years. And when we look at that the patient population of obese patients, we see even a further disparity where patients with the highest 10-year cardiovascular disease risk are 14 times less likely to get the drugs than the healthiest patients. So this really indicates to me that this is a missed opportunity for health plans and providers to ensure that the patients who are the sickest and can most benefit from the drugs are getting access to them.
And to be clear, this is a drug that someone would have to stay on throughout their life?
Right now, that is the way things are looking. I think most physicians would agree that patients who are taking the drugs for diabetes or weight loss may sort of lose some of the benefits if they stop the drugs. It's not entirely known yet if that's possible. And certainly there's, you know, new generations and new drugs in the pipeline, that, you know, perhaps could change that outlook. But that is the way it appears today, that you would need to likely take these drugs, for life. But more research really needs to be done to better understand if that's the case, and if the drugs can be discontinued, what the best way would be to do that.
And do you see a way for the drug manufacturing to scale so that the drug costs can be driven down significantly, so that it can address that social and economic inequity that you just talked about earlier?
Yeah, the shortage of medication is really a conundrum, because we know that while I think the drugs are surging in popularity, the fact of the matter is they're probably still underutilized for a lot of patients. We do see more and more drugs coming to market. We've also seen compounding pharmacies play an important role in closing that gap. However, compounding pharmacies are not as highly regulated and can vary significantly in quality and safety. And so a lot of physicians, you know, discourage the use of compounding pharmacies, although I'm also familiar with some provider groups that have worked closely with compounding pharmacies to lower the cost of medications for their patient population. But that really requires a true partnership between the health plan who's covering the drugs, the providers, and the compounding pharmacies. Unfortunately, I don't think that the prices are going to come down significantly in the short term. Unfortunately, there's just, you know, too much money to be made. But I think we have to get creative, and I think there's more than one way, you know, to better address the inequity, whether that's working with compounding pharmacies or using risk stratification and lab values to better identify patients who are going to benefit.
And what lessons can we take from managing GLP-1 access to other high-cost medications that have significant patient opportunities, but are seen as just too expensive? Is there some lessons we can take from this development and these surprises?
Absolutely. You know, as we talked at the beginning of the podcast, biomarkers and lab values are increasingly used in the diagnosis and treatment of a number of diseases. For example, in cancer, oftentimes genetic testing and of the tissue or the tumor tissue can be used for drug selection. There's increasingly testing that can be done to predict whether patients will how well patients will react to expensive autoimmune biologics, like for rheumatoid arthritis or psoriasis. And so I think in a lot of ways, with access to that lab data and better collaboration, you know, with health plans in terms of making sure that patients who are getting, first of all, making sure that the patients who need the testing done, making sure that those are the right patients, making sure that physicians are interpreting the test results correctly, and then finally helping to support physicians in selecting the next best treatment. That sequence of events can be really difficult for some physicians, but also a huge opportunity to better improve care. For example, we see in the oncology space, non-small cell lung cancer, that patients who have genetic testing done for cancer, only 50% of them are actually getting the right chemotherapy drug. And that's really just because the landscape of biomarkers and genetic testing has become so complex, it's very difficult for physicians to keep up. And so making sure that we use those lab values and the results of that testing to get patients on the right medication is going to help not only, you know, reduce unnecessary pharmaceutical spending, but also really improve the quality of care.
Well, my last question is, are you at Avalon really changing what lab testing means and just the way that patients and providers and payers need to think about the role that testing can play in drug determination, disease diagnosis, just the whole range of things that you just described?
that's certainly my hope. You know, biomarkers and genetic testing are really just exploding. We know that there's about 10 new genetic tests approved every single day. And so it's really just impossible for physicians to keep up. At Avalon, we're really thinking about that entire lab episode of care and how we can better support both, you know, physicians and health plans in terms of test selection, test interpretation, and then selecting the next best action, whether that's a drug or perhaps a wait and see approach. And I think that we really need to be thinking about the technology, the data and the tools that we can give to physicians, to ensure that they are following evidence-based guidelines and providing the best possible care to their patients.
In a timely fashion and with calls to action, not just a bunch of data that they have to sort through. Is that right?
Exactly. You know, you think about the complexity of this, the physicians have to look up past lab values, have to look up historical lab values. If we can use technology to put that in their fingertips at the point of care with recommendations and also to better stratify patient populations for treatment and test selection, I think we can really close some of these health equity gaps.
Thanks to my guest today, Dr. Julie Schultz, VP of Product at Avalon Healthcare Solutions, avalonhcs.com. I'm Karen Jagoda, and you've been listening to the EmpoweredPatientPodcast.com show. Like us on Facebook at Empowered Patient Radio. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.